Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode. One of these years, the 1-1 episode, I guess we'll say. I was about to say 1-0, Colton, but it's not 1-0. I am, of course, Nick Baumgartner, along with Colton Pouncey. After a Lions victory here on a Wednesday, Colton, first of all, how are we doing? Second of all, your thoughts on the first one here?
I'm doing good. It's Victory Wednesday. I think they kind of
Wednesday.
It kind of lasts a little longer on here. You got to savor these wins.
That's true.
I'm Detroit, but
that's right.
Doing good, and that game was pretty impressive for the Lions. I mean,
it was,
you know,
yeah.
To shut the Commanders out in the first half, the way the offense was moving the ball, they still could have scored more points, and that's the thing that they keep harping about. Like,
right.
The offense isn't where it is, where it needs to be, and yet they're putting up, you know, 34, 35, you know, these these big chunk scores. And, you know, I think they're in a good spot right now. It's still early, 1-1, but I think they have to like how they performed so far this year.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to get into both sides of it, but I mean, yeah, that's the overarching, I think, takeaway from the 30,000-foot view that most people, you know, have reacted to. I think, you know, even internally, I think that some people here were like, whoa, what are the Lions doing on offense, right? Because that's now back-to-back weeks. And, you know, as we saw what Philly did, you know, on Monday night, everybody now, if you didn't already know, and, you know, we kind of knew it last week, haven't seen them, that's a really good team. What the Lions did in that game sort of holds up. So you look at what they've done offensively through 2 weeks and all the different ways they've found to score, and suddenly Ben Johnson's got a little shine to him, right?
He does.
I think that that's growing. I think it will continue to grow. I'm not alone in that. Have you seen some of this?
He's getting some national love for sure. I've seen it. No doubt.
I don't know where. I don't know how much it'll. It's been interesting because I think, you know, Campbell, the whole time in the offseason was like, you know, I will probably be involved. I'm going to be involved. I'm not going to be involved. I'm going to be involved. I'm not going to be involved. But then it was like, whenever the time came for him to set, you know, put shine on Ben Johnson or whatever, I always kind of figured, how's that going to go? It's not going to be, well, it's Campbell and.
Yeah.
And he said it all. He said it right after the game, right? It was like one of the first things he said. I thought Ben called a fantastic game. And that's back-to-back weeks, like you said, in the 30s. And you probably could have had more. So, like, that's the biggest takeaway in general, I think right now about the Lions is that all the things we thought could be possible offensively, even with some of the warts that we've seen, all the things we thought could be possible offensively with this team, even with injuries and some hiccups, seem like they're still all on the table, which really makes things a little more interesting, I think, when you stretch it out, does it not? I mean, I'm not trying to get ahead of myself. I don't know. Your thoughts just on the offensive progression here through 2 weeks? Because that's been pretty good comparatively. You know, you look across the league this early in the season, to be firing like this is pretty good.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's so funny thinking back to training camp. And we were asking ourselves out there every single day, is this offense good or is the secondary bad?
And like, what's going on here? Right, yeah.
We didn't have an answer. You know, they had those joint practices with the Colts, and I was down there. And, you know, they held their own, but it also wasn't like, you know, the dominant performances that we had been seeing in training camp against the secondary. So I think I had a little bit of pause coming out of that trip, that two-day stretch. But, I mean, man, to start the season, to see the things that they're doing, to see the way it's coming together, the run game, the different schemes that Ben Johnson is putting out there with Hank Fraley, the guys that they're, you know, this backup interior that's playing like all pros right now. It's crazy. And then Goff, he still hasn't been, you know, entirely sharp. Like, he was much better in the last game, but I still think he has room to improve, and that's good for the Lions that he can still take his game to another level. He's got some room to improve there. Because that passing game, what they're doing with Amon-Ra St. Brown, the end around, the way they're using him, you know, Josh Reynolds got involved last week with the touchdown. So they're doing some things where it's really encouraging. And I think when you kind of break it down, the offense is kind of the strength of this team right now. And it might be able to carry them pretty far. We'll see.
It's, you know, and we'll just start on that side of the ball. We'll start with the offense and we'll start with Goff because I think that's the best place to go here. And I don't want to overlook the interior offensive line. We'll go to them in a second. But this, to me, statistically it probably wasn't, but this to me felt like his best game as a Lion, probably. you know, you could maybe argue there were days, I think when they played the Cardinals, he played really well, and they won that game last year. Obviously, he makes the plays late in the first win last year, too. But, like, this to me, just the vibe and feel of it, and sort of, like, he answered the bell when they needed him to. Because we talked about that last week, like, it, you know, I think we recorded before they knew that Jonah was going to be out, and nobody knew what they were going to do, but it was still kind of like, well, something's going to have to happen here because it's not going to be good. But bottom line is, this is going to be a big opportunity to keep the fans on board for another week and keep them, maybe even crank it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be on Jared Goff to get you there. And it has to start right out of the gates. He's got to come out and make something happen. And, you know, Washington helped with a coverage bust early, but like, he found it, bang, right away, and away we go. And St. Brown told us after the game that he wasn't supposed to get the ball on that play. That was encouraging to hear, too, because that means Goff is seeing the field. He's understanding everything that's going on, and the way they started that game, and he had some misses there early, and they had some hiccups, too, whatever.
Yeah.
The way they started that game and asserted themselves was the best I can remember seeing from them in a long time. It just felt like that's a team that... And we talked about it up there. It reminded me a lot of, I kept thinking of the scene in Hard Knocks that Glenn in front of the team room was talking to the team about, like, all you guys played at places in college, most of you did, where you won a lot of games.
Yep.
And you woke up every day that you were there knowing what it took to win a football game. To me, that's what that felt like from Jared Goff on Sunday. And I think that that filtered down, you know, through the whole team. Because there was probably some nerves, I got to think, on offense going into that one. And I imagine he settled down quite a bit.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have blamed him if he was a little, you know, antsy back there with the offensive line, given the way it was. But he looked...
when they said Skipper was going to be the guy, I was like, what? Like, okay.
That was our reaction in practice, too. It's like, wait, okay, so Jonah's not practicing, Frank's out. Like, who's the...
I still thought it was going to be that other guy, Forbes.
Forbes, yeah. It's like, who's the left guard? Yeah, and Skipper, you see him at 6'9", 6'10", whatever he is, just banging around in there. And you're like, all right, I guess this is happening. And... You know, he gets the start, and he does pretty well, and they hold up. You know, pass protection was a little iffy at times, but...
Early it struggled, and then they adjusted. Yes,
they adjusted.
Know, to be fair, yeah.
And Goff just, you know, looked comfortable. He was taking what was coming his way. You know, he had a couple misses, like the deep pass to Chark off the fake or the ladder or whatever. That was probably a little bit underthrown, but, you know, decent ball. But still, four touchdowns, around like 250 yards, zero interceptions. Was in control of the offense the whole way. And again, like, that was what you want to see from Jared Goff. Like, the first drive was not great, but every drive after that was pretty solid for him. And I think you'll take that from Jared
Goff.
It's
that urgency that he plays with after he's made mistakes oftentimes that you want, that he had right when this game started, where it was just like, maybe it took, I don't know, maybe I'm speculating. Maybe it took something for, you know, for him to be like, okay, I don't have Frank. I don't have the two guards. I got to do it today. Like, Swift's hurt, right? His ankle was, you know, they limited his carries, as we saw, or his touches anyway. Frankly, at this time last year, they had gone through similar situations with injuries and things, not to this scale because it's different, but like, and he didn't step up. He didn't answer the bell. That, you know, they got maybe five or six games into the season, and Campbell kept biting his lip, and finally was like, he needs to do more. Like, this is not okay. He needs to help us. And then, you know, he started to take off. But, you know, he's gotten into it earlier this year. And that's why I think for me it was disappointing. And maybe I was too hard on him last week, but it was disappointing to see him start so slow because he had gotten so into it in the offseason. And it was early in the winter we heard
saw
all
it.
This.
Yeah, we saw it.
And then, so to see it again this week, as disappointing as it was last week, to me that was super encouraging for that type of bounce back. You talk about how's a quarterback respond after he has an interception. You know, how's he respond after he has a bad game? And that maybe he didn't have a bad game in week one, but he didn't have the game he could have. And this was much more in line with that. So kudos to Jared Goff, because I'm as hard on him, I think, maybe even more so than anybody around here these days. I get yelled at by all kinds of people for how bad. And I didn't even realize it was that bad. But either way, that said, really impressive. And I think it changes a lot. The better he plays, obviously, changes a lot of what maybe this team could do as you look at it going forward.
Yeah, they let you have it in the comment section of that first
They game. Always do, but that's fine. It's earned.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
But no, Goff had a great game, and I think that was so encouraging. Everything you said, I agree with.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been good to see that sort of stabilize, I think, for him, because that means that there's a lot of growth, I think, happening there, you know, mentally. he was a guy that used to let those mistakes sort of linger a lot longer. And this was, we'll see. He's got to do it again.
Yeah.
Go on the road in a tough spot. We'll talk about it in a second. But, you know, check number one for Jared Goff. That was a really good performance in a win. We talked about Swift's ankle there for a second, Colton. I know you guys, nobody got quite, you know, the full answer from him on, you know, how bad it was. Nobody's probably ever going to get it. But obviously it was not nothing.
Yeah.
Right? Because, you know, I think he had 10. I don't think he had 15 touches. It was maybe around 10. Was it less than 10 that he had somewhere in there?
I think it was like 7.
Yeah, it wasn't that much. He made the most of them, obviously, and Swift's being Swift. But, like, you know, I think it speaks to probably the whole offense, but also, like, where he's at right now as a player is this is something. He's kind of locked in here at a level we've really never seen from him.
Yeah. I mean, I think reporters, I think it was either Thursday or Friday that we were in the locker room, kind of swarmed around here waiting for an answer, like, are you going to play?
Yeah.
He's on his phone, like, sneaks out the back. He's like, I'm busy. I got to go.
Yeah.
So you're like, all right, we'll wait and see for Sunday. So when he was out there, I figured it would be a little limited for him. I think it was 7 touches for like 80-something yards total. But he made, again, he's making the most of all of his opportunities out there. He had the 50-yard run, another one, back-to-back weeks with one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had the screen pass or whatever where he's on the ground. He catches the tip ball from Goff, falls to the ground, gets back up, and shakes the entire Washington defense out of their cleats and scores a touchdown. And he said in the locker room, my only mentality on that play was to score.
Right.
And that's exactly what you want to hear from a guy like DeAndre Swift. That's exactly what Deuce Staley wants to hear him say. So I agree. He's locked in. He's in a great place right now. He's maximizing every touch. You'd like to see more, but the injury kind of played an issue with that this week. Last week, I think they were kind of easing him in with only 18 touches. But, I mean, if he's healthy, you got to get him up to maybe like 22 per game.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And let him work because he's your offense right now. Like Goff, he's going to do what he does. He's going to find his receivers. But the things that Swift can do, he can be the centerfold of this offense right now.
Well, you know, I mean, like we talked about it in the summer and I made the connection for them. I think Campbell had mentioned something about workload and he'd made the comparison to what the Saints used to do with Kamara in training camp. And, you know, I said at the time, I'm like, well, you know, obviously that's a natural comparison, I think, for how they think of football, what they come from in terms of former systems. And Swift, it could be that. I think that that's something that they've seen from him. And the last thing that he has to prove here, really, number two things. One would be consistency, but number two would be he has to stay healthy. He has to stay healthy long enough and be durable enough to kind of get through that sort of thing. And so the fact that, yeah, I mean, that's probably, and I don't know how severe the injury was, but I'm just going to guess 2 years ago he wasn't going to play. Maybe last year we wouldn't have seen him. But if it was that severe to a point where it's, you know, he's not practicing for several days and then it's game time and he's still playing, I got to say, in his rookie year, he probably would have sat for sure. He missed time with pulled muscles and things like that and little tweaks here and there. Stuff that I think Deuce has often talked about and tried to flirt the line of being like, I'm not trying to say he's soft, but like you're a running back. These are things that we're going to have to play through. Like your body is going to be in constant disrepair. And Swift came from a program at Georgia where the carriers were very regimented and handled. There was like 6 guys who were NFL players every year in the backfield. This is different. And what you're seeing and what Colton would just describe there is a guy who's getting it now. Like the day-to-day, week-to-week, the accumulation of everything that you do for this team, you don't have to be necessarily at your elite best to really have an impact like that. And I think that, you know, 7 touches for 80-something yards and a crazy-ass touchdown really speaks to that. And now as you go forward, we'll be able to see what he does to open up everything for everybody else, because that really is what you're getting from DeAndre Swift.
And I do think on that 50-yard run, if he was 100%, he probably scores on that.
Probably would have, He had him at the end. And that's one where he gave a little juke.
Yeah,
and that's the one where you're like, yeah, just go, man. But like also, again, you're like, well, he is hurt.
Yeah.
So I guess whatever. But then he scores on that one.
He didn't look hurt on that one. But the touchdown.
You're like, oh my God. Like, that was. But that's Swift. I mean, it was crazy to watch, but it was also like, yeah, man, we've seen him do stuff like that. Like, that's not insane. It's not crazy to sort of like. I think that was Deuce's point for him the whole offseason was like, it's not crazy for you to dream that you can be a star in the league. You have the ability to do that.
Yeah.
I think so. I think we can say that. I think he has star special traits, whatever you want to call it, like a guy that can be a Pro Bowl type, you know, playmaker that we all think about when we think about guys in this league who, when you get them in space, all hell breaks loose. He's that, you know, like, I think that that's fair to say. And, you know, the healthier he is and the higher that number gets, especially against good teams, you know, the better the Lions are going to be in shape there. We also saw a little bit of Craig Reynolds, which was good. Good to see for him. And then, you know,
I mean,
continuation of Williams there as well.
The backup offensive line was creating like massive. I tweeted about a couple of them.
Yeah, right.
These massive lanes. It was Jamal. I think he had a 12-yard run.
Pretty early,
they
too.
They parted the sea for him. And then literally two plays later, they do the exact same thing for Craig Reynolds. And you're like, all right, they can do this.
This is working. Yeah. So that's where I was going next. And really, we've talked about Evan Brown a few times on the show. Skipper got the attention after the game, and we'll touch on him in a second and everything. And Logan, obviously, we've talked about. But Evan Brown, we've said, I think, you know, maybe the best backup center in the league, at least in that conversation. A guy that's probably starting caliber, and a guy that I, frankly, I think the Lions don't like talking about a lot because I don't think they want people, I don't think they want other teams to know about him. He is really good, man. Like, he is a lifesaver in so many ways for them because the ability to not have to worry about center in that scenario, that disastrous, we lost all three of our interior linemen. You just didn't have to worry about it. Like, I mean, you have another starting center on your roster in Evan Brown, who, especially in protection, he doesn't give you what Ragnow gives you as a run blocker, and he's never going to be able to do that. But in protection, you don't lose a lot. He knows what he's doing. He holds up. You know, he can sort the calls. He's clearly good enough to help two guys who really are still, you know, Stenberg's still learning, and Skipper had never done it before.
Yeah.
I mean, my God, like, Evan Brown did not get a lot of public praise after that game.
He really
didn't. I think probably for a reason. I think they're trying to hide him because he's really good. I mean, I don't know. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn. Your thoughts on the interior in general, but specifically Evan, because he just gets more and more impressive every time he plays.
Yeah, zero sacks, zero QB hits, zero hurries, zero pressures in that game. I think PFF gave him 84.7 for pass blocking.
Pretty good.
Pretty damn good. And you might be onto something there why they didn't mention him. Because they're giving Skipper all this love. You know,
yeah, right.
Stenberg got his praise last week. But Evan's like, hey, guys, don't talk about Evan.
Evan chipped in. I saw he said that he's like, even Evan helped out a little bit.
Evan, a little bit. All right,
like, what the hell are you talking about? Yeah. Like,
no, yes, I mean, that's the one guy you don't have to worry about in the interior. I mean, like, as soon as they said Frank was out, I was just like, all right, well, next man up. Evan's got this, you know.
Right.
That he was the guy I wasn't concerned about. And, you know, he kind of proved that true in this game. He had an excellent game, pass protection. Again, rim blocking doesn't give you exactly what Frank gives you, but still held up. I think his grade was 62.1 or something like that.
He's capable. Right. Very capable. And that's the difference. Like, Ragnow's big enough and strong enough. And that's why he's a different dude, because he's so big and powerful in there and crazy athletic.
Yeah.
Like, Evan is probably not big enough to be a guard. I think when Campbell had talked about the earlier shuffle after Vitae, he was like, one of the things they thought about was, could Evan Brown play guard? Because if he could, he would be starting. Because he is your
trying to get your best five out there. Yeah.
Right. He would be your fifth best guy in that scenario. He's better than Stenberg's. But he's not a guard. So, you know, necessarily in that offense. So it's kind of a weird deal, but, you know, kind of a hidden gem that they found, because he helped them out a lot last year too. It went under the radar big time, but that thing would have really fallen apart if you know, Goff's best football hadn't really even started yet until when Frank got hurt. Like, he was still struggling, and then when Frank got hurt, it was like, oh my God, like, this is never, it's going to be a nightmare the whole rest of the way. And, I mean, to me, Evan Brown was worth a lot more than, probably what people have given him credit for. Maybe I'm spoiling this for the Lions, maybe I'm not, but, like, he's been a really good football player for them and a good find and development piece by the front office and Hank Fraley and everybody else involved.
Well, I said this to you sometime this offseason, but, like, how were the Lions able to bring him back for so cheap? And also,
I don't know. Well, he got a raise. He did get more money, but still, yeah, I mean,
but, like, he is a starting
guy. That is the one thing. Campbell did say that in, I think, training camp. Somewhere in there, he was like, we got Evan back, which was, like, I was thankful for that or something like that. Maybe I'm overthinking this. I don't think I am, though, because, like, I mean, obviously people know about him, and they're going to find out about him, and, you know, they know how well he played last year. I think I'm sure he had offers or options to go to other places, but I'm not sure if it would have been to start. Maybe it would have been to compete.
Yeah.
But the ability to maybe, or the chance to work here with Ragnow and other, you know, I don't know. Maybe that's, so, I don't know what all plays into it, but he's been a huge, huge, huge thing for this whole team.
I might just say Lions fans, enjoy him while you have him.
Maybe. Yeah.
We'll see how long he sticks
because, out. Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's the other part, you know, Campbell got us asked about Ragnow, I know, earlier and after the game as well. And was it the same toe or foot or whatever it was? Was it toe? Is it the, yeah, I think it's a toe, right? Foot, whatever foot, it is.
Yeah.
Same thing, but he also had a groin injury before the toe, which leads me to believe that if he had one and not the other, that he probably would have played.
Probably.
Yep. Based on the tone. I'm just parsing there. So you don't want, I don't want to like speak in absolutes, but my guess there is that, you know, his foot was probably bothering him plus the groin. If it was just one or the other, he probably would have been okay. But the groin is not going to get better if he plays. It's just going to get worse.
He's got to let that heal. Yeah.
Right. So I get that. Jonah, I think, was a hand of some sort, right?
It was a finger.
Finger?
Yeah. And it doesn't sound like it's much better based on what Campbell said on Monday.
Yeah. Which was late in the week, too, though, right? Like,
yes.
When they made that decision. Because I think Skipper said he didn't know that he was going to play until Thursday.
Thursday, they had a talk around the walkthrough. Yeah.
So that's pretty late in the week. And that leads me to believe either that that it just happened or Jonah was considering going. I don't know. But like, if Camp, it's, I would assume he still has to be considered questionable as we go forward here. They haven't sent out the thing today. But
no, Campbell said on Monday that I would say, I think he said, the finger wasn't any better than it was on Saturday, and he said it on Monday. So I guess we'll hear more, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, the rest of this week, but yeah, not great. I mean, it doesn't sound like he's getting closer. That might be another game where he has some miss, but we'll monitor the practice reports. We'll talk to Campbell and we'll see what's going on with him.
And then the rest of it, I mean, it's the Skipper thing that a lot of people, you know, pointed to after the game, you know, a cool moment for him, obviously a guy that's played as many 20 contracts. That was a crazy that when he said the thing about the 20 contracts and like they're not worth the paper you're written on, you stop and you think and you're like, man, like that is true. Yeah. And you're like, and he's not, I mean, that Dan Skipper represents one in a lot of people who are just like that. Like, that's why I think a lot of people sort of saw that and they're like, I know a lot of guys on a lot of teams that are exactly like that. And the coolest part about the whole thing, I think, is that you saw how the roster reacted, and you saw that Dan Campbell was able to get that out of a guy who no one has ever been able to get that out of before. To me, that is the whole thing. Yeah. That's Dan Campbell. Like, this guy's never played guard. He is 6'10". How many people asked you, is he setting the record for the NFL guard height? Because I got asked that like 20 times. Maybe. He could be.
I didn't think about that.
I got asked that like 10 times. I'm like, I don't know. Maybe. Because I don't know of any that are taller than that. Never played it before.
I'm getting fewer height tweets these days.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Because you've left that Michigan State beat. So, but he's never played it before. 6'10". Yeah. All this. Never made a team. Had been cut by this team every time. And they get it out of him.
A lot of practice squads, yeah.
They get it out of him. Because Campbell looks at him and says, I trust you to go do it. And he goes and does it. Like, I'm not asking you to. I'm not asking you to go to be a Pro Bowler. I'm not asking you to go solve an unsolvable riddle. I'm just go in there. I think Skipper actually said, we'll go in there and see what happens. They've done that at other positions. They've done that at other spots here before, and it has worked. And it works more than it doesn't, I think, is what, you know, we would go up. Chris and I called guys like that last year, like walk-ons. Jerry Jacobs was like a walk-on. Mm-hmm. And he's not a walk-on, but like UDFA guys, like the practice squad guys, the guys that like they keep around here, and everybody's always like, why the hell do they keep those guys? And it's like, well, that's why. Like,
when their number is called.
Yeah, they're not perfect. They have flaws. They're, you know, they're probably not going to be able to do that more than one or two times. Like, if you have to ask Skipper to do that, maybe one or two more times, it's probably not going to go well. But hey, like, in a spot, you're going to be able to get it out of them. And, like, Campbell, I feel like, has more of that than most coaches that we see. And to me, that might be the clearest example yet, because there weren't chumps in there they were playing against.
No.
And this is a guy that, you know, has never, you know, that's impressive for all three of those guys in there. Really impressive. And for Decker and Sewell, because I think that speaks to you know, the commitment there as well, helping protect the guys next to you, helping make sure that they're better, helping make sure they don't have as many, you know, issues. All the things that we heard from the offense on Sunday was exactly what you want, I feel like, in so many ways, and we still haven't seen them at their fullest capacity or full strength or whatever you want to say yet. So,
yeah,
impressive.
Impressive job by Hank Fraley getting those guys ready to go. I mean,
yeah,
we haven't really talked about him, but the fact that he's got these interior guys playing like starters, like given the, again, not Pro Bowl level, but
hanging in though, you know, winning football.
I mean, mm-hmm. Stenberg was out here moving dudes. Skipper had like a 70.4 run blocking grade. Like he's like they were holding their own against a pretty good, you know, front.
Yeah, good
front
players forward. In there. Yeah. And like they have a good front. That was the one thing that you looked at and you said, hey, that could be a real problem, especially if those guys are hurt. Really wasn't. And they took control of the game. The one spot we haven't touched on yet, which is probably the biggest spot coming out of this one, receiver, and especially Amon-Ra St. Brown, who I think if people didn't know Nashon already about this guy, they do now this is a true draft steal. We've talked about that all last year, talked about that on this show, probably since the day he showed up, that this is a professional football player. I told you in the summer, I think, I was like, Colton, when he was standing out there, I was like, this guy is the definition of a professional athlete. To me, that's what this guy is. And it's not overwhelming. It's not like he got caught three times in this game from behind or whatever. It's going to happen. But this dude is going to get 8 or 9 for 80 yards almost every game if you're not trying to take it away from him. And even then, he might still find a way. This guy, Campbell said last year at one point, he's worth his weight in gold. Like, I really would agree with him. I think he is for the modern game, man, he is really special. And I think that they're starting to see it now. Your thoughts on the Sun God here as we go forward?
I mean, he's a dude. That's the best way to put it. I mean, and you had kind of told me about it in training camp. And I'm just like, okay, I see it a little bit. You see him,
but not a lot bit. Yeah.
You see the 202 passes every day on the jugs machine.
Yes,
it adds like up. His mentality is very like, I'm here to work. Like,
no bullshit. Too,
yeah. None of that.
Not afraid of anything.
He gets out on the field and he is fearless out there. And I think that it's funny though, because I think there are some questions like, okay, well, did his production late in the season only come because Hockenson was injured, because Swift wasn't there all the time? Like, would his target share go down, stuff like that? And that's proven to be entirely false. Like, he's the dude on this team, and it's not even close. Like, the connection that he has with Jared Goff is really special. He's going to get, like, 12 targets a game. He's going to catch 8 or 9 of them. His consistency is unmatched. I mean, he's out here breaking NFL records, and he's 22 years old.
22 like, years old.
Incredible. Yeah. So,
I got to steal. They did. And they did a great job mining that out. And I think that that's one that, you know, when you go back to draft night, Holmes talked about, or draft weekend, whatever it was, that they waited on him. You know, that they identified him. They wanted him. He's a perfect fit for everything that, and he was. The work ethic, everything he was going to be able to do for everybody else around him. And, you know, I don't know how much these guys like to give away their secrets and everything else. And maybe it hurt Goff to do it a little bit. But, like, when he started explaining some of the little nuances of why Amon-Ra St. Brown is a different football player. Like, that's the goal. When he doesn't round off routes, he comes back to the ball instead of, like, if it's an out route, a 7-yard out route on the opposite hash, like, you got to help your quarterback out, right? You can't just say, well, shit, man, throw that thing all the way across the field and drop it into a bucket for me, man. Like, no, you got to be willing to do all of the stuff that the scouts see every single time. And like, there's a reason why this guy looks like he's always open. It's because he works himself open. He gets open. It's not just, well, they scheme him open, he's faster than everybody. He's not faster than anybody, as we've seen.
He got chased down a couple times.
He gets chased down. He gets chased down more than he doesn't. He's not faster than everybody. He's not stronger than everybody. But there's a consistency to the way he works. In that it's the classic case of he's fast enough, strong enough, agile enough, and he works harder than everybody else by like quite a bit.
That's his elite trait.
Yeah, yeah, like that's his like superpower, like or whatever that they talk about. Like a hard worker in this league isn't working as hard as this dude. Like this is he's at the high end of the people that train, and I think it would a lot of people would look at him and say it's overtraining. You're overdoing it.
Probably,
but. This is who he is, and this is how it works for him, and he is just a machine, man. He's a robot out there. Like, I don't know what else to say. Like, as dependable as it gets. And everybody's seeing that at this point now. Have to. I mean, you'd be blind not to.
Yeah. The guys that post themselves working out at 5 a.m., I remember I was in the gym with his brother and his dad at 3 a.m.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Just in silence. Yeah, he, no one saying a single word.
Yeah, he already went home and cleaned up before he even got there and was on to the next one or whatever. Like,
yeah.
There was a comment he said at one point about somebody asked him about his training in the offseason somewhere in the summer. And he was talking about his schedule, right? Because he was like, you know, I take like 6 weeks off or something like that.
Yes, that's hilarious.
Or whatever. He was like, I take like 6 weeks. Maybe it wasn't even that long. After the season. And he's like, and I don't do anything. He's like, I just sit there. I just play video games and I don't do anything. Like, I just be a kid, basically.
A lot of FIFA, probably. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of FIFA. And then he's like, but when I'm done with that and I go back in the gym, he's like, that's all I do for the rest of the summer. He's like, so I don't half-ass train. If I'm going to train, it's going to be 14 hours a day, every day. Yes. And you're like, and he's explained insane, it. And you're like, holy shit.
It all makes sense.
Really good player, and he is a fantasy football. If you've got him on your fantasy team, folks, what did he have? Colton, almost 40 points there.
He did.
In this one. But I think more importantly, what this leads to for me is that when Jameson Williams gets healthy.
Oh, boy.
What you're going to have here is Swift, Jameson Williams, and Amon-Ra St. Brown in a trio scenario, triplets, if you will, that involves the ability to basically cut people up at every level of the field.
Yes.
In theory. Now, we have to see it all happen. We have to see everybody get healthy. But, like, I think it's fair for people to start getting a little excited about being able to project some of that, which is really friggin' cool. I think for people around here who haven't had anything like that, maybe ever, in terms of three guys that have that type of potential. But that's really cool. You can start to see it now, right? I mean, you can see what all three, you know what we know about Jameson from college, and we have to see it translate and everything else. But my God, I mean, imagine, and we haven't even touched on Hockenson's impact in that, but like those four weapons,
yeah,
you can't ask for much more if you're Goff. I mean,
it's exciting.
Or any quarterback, it is.
I think you, was it you who said it up in the, you know, the press box that if Jameson were on the end around, he could have walked backwards into the end zone?
Backwards, yeah. Did a summer, yeah. I mean, like, and on the one that Swift caught in the middle, or I'm sorry, that
St. Brown
caught in the middle. Yeah, that St. Brown caught in the middle of the field that he took off on.
Yeah,
Jameson would have dunked that one through the goalpost too.
Yeah.
Like he has the different speed, but the difference there too is like you can't. At some point, teams are going to start to work to take away some of the stuff that St. Brown gets. They're going to, you know, but you can't take away everything. So if you've got a guy that can really blow the top off and a guy like St. Brown that can kill people at all three levels of the field, plus Swift, holy
pick your poison.
Yeah, that becomes, if your quarterback is really in tune with what's going on, we talked about Ben Johnson earlier and everything that he's sort of, the impact he's had on this offense, like they're in a really good spot right now. I don't know what all the analytics say in terms of where they rank through two games, and some of that is whatever, because it's two games. We've got a lot of September football going on around out there. But, like, I think you've been able to see through 2 weeks, especially against an Eagles defense that had a hell of a damn night the other day. Slay with what a night he had.
Yeah.
but, you know, hey, that's two games, big points put up with reason to believe that more could have been had. And you look at the schedule the rest of the way and say, that could be replicated. I think you could see more of that, right? I mean, like, I don't think we're stretching here.
What are the next? We got Minnesota, then Seattle at home, and then New England.
Okay. I think, like, that's pretty good, man. That's now we're talking about games that we just said at the top, like the Aaron Glenn scene, like, hey, all you guys came from winning programs. You all won somewhere in your life. Once you start to get that feeling back a little bit, talent's got to be talent, but like now you're starting to get into fights with teams that the gap just isn't that big. I mean, you know, player to player, whatever. They might have a couple more guys here and there than you do, but if you get into a fight in the fourth quarter, you see what happens. Those are the games that this team can steal if they play all the way through the wire. But it's been an encouraging 2 weeks for the offense. I don't know much. You want to get guys healthy, I would say, is the biggest thing, and you want to see how they can fit. But
yeah,
it's been encouraging for sure, especially, you know, after what we saw in camp and everything else.
No doubt. Right, now about the defense.
Go ahead. Let's pause here.
Yeah.
And then we'll go talk about the defense because we got to pause, take our break, and then we'll come right back. And we will flip it to the other side. Colt talks some defense here, which is as usual, a case of good and bad. Maybe a mix of both here, but mostly good, right? I mean, I think we can say mostly good, mostly an encouraging day. I thought a good performance by Aaron Glenn and the defense. I thought, you know, and Campbell noted on it after the game pretty quickly, but really the thing that you take away, and we'll talk about Aiden Hutchinson here in a second, but as a team, they finished. We talked about the finishing. They adjusted some of their rush lanes. They played with more discipline. He gave credit to Todd Walsh and those guys, too. They finished up front, and you saw the pressure land. Now, Carson Wentz is not Jalen Hurts. We talked about how you're not going to have to deal with Jalen Hurts as much, and people saw that he's a little better than they thought maybe Monday night again. But Wentz can still move a little bit, and it was important to see them come out as an entire front seven and finish. I thought that was maybe the biggest takeaway I had, you know, top down defensively.
Yeah, the pursuit, they were swarming to the ball. I mean, that was all encouraging. You saw so many guys. Like, even if Wentz kind of avoided the first guy, there was always another guy right there.
Right, exactly.
And another guy, if that guy missed. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the type of football Aaron Glenn wants to see from his guys. It wasn't always there. Again, you know, the Eagles' offensive line and things Jalen Hurts kind of – the things that he can do kind of hurt that in week one. But you saw it in week two. And Dan Campbell said – when everyone's talking about Aiden, oh, he had a rough game, like, whatever – Dan Campbell said, I'm not worried, but also he needs some help. We need some of these other guys to kind of step up too.
Yeah.
And I think you saw that. Even on every sack he had, it wasn't just him just beating a one guy and to the quarterback. Yeah. It was pursuit. It was, you know, Charles Harris with a spin move, forcing Wentz to back up right into Aiden. It was, you know, a little stunt that, you know, has Aiden inside and
that he got home on.
Kaminsky taking two guys up front, making that lane for him. It's like, he's getting the help from his defenders.
Exactly.
He really didn't see in week one. So I have to think Campbell was encouraged by that too.
Yeah, the whole thing, the whole picture, because again, exactly, like nobody, the sacks they were creating and a lot of the pressures they're creating are all individual, I feel like, you know, individual pressures, but the sacks they're creating are team sacks, like you're saying, yes. Colton. I mean, like they're results of, you know, stunts and games that they're calling up front, or, you know, they had a couple of sim pressures that they brought that got home. So it's a result of playing to your help and playing part of a team structure, but also dominating your block when the time calls for it. And that's where I want to start with Aiden and finishing. Because, look, like last week, we talked on this show, people were overreacting, which is to be expected sometimes and all that.
Sure.
But at the same time, he did need to finish. There were things in that game, and he wore out and all that. For him to come out in this one, and he got the starting a lineup announcement this time, right? He got the big him and Rodrigo got the big pops from the crowd.
Yep.
But this was a big opportunity and a big statement type thing for him against a team that he could get home on. And I thought it was huge for him to finish like that. I mean, 3.5 is nuts, but I thought it was huge for him to come back after hearing all the people say, you know, chirp, 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 and to come out and finish. I mean, you couldn't answer that any better.
You really couldn't. I mean, people were pretty quiet on Twitter. I noticed that after that. So,
yeah.
Good on Aiden for getting home on those. You know, 3 sacks in 1.5. I think the 3 sacks were a Lions rookie record. Did it in week 2. So that's, that just kind of shows you the type of guy he is. And again, not all those sacks were like him just dominating.
Oh, no, yeah.
Being there, right place, right time, continuing to pursue, even when your initial rush doesn't work. The guys around you helping out and doing their jobs and forcing things back your way. I mean, it's that simple. I don't know if the Lions really had a guy that could finish the way that Aiden could last year.
Yeah.
Where you might have been doing some of those things, but at the end of the day, you're still allowing the play to extend. Right. Aiden's the one coming in at the very end being like, no, I got this. I'm cleaning this up. We're getting off the field.
And he gets all the garbage. That's exactly right. It's the one sack that he had. I think it was the first one was just a result of him like running the circle, as they say, around the edge. Just keep going. Just if the guy's got you blocked or whatever, just keep going around him, because these quarterbacks don't stay stationary in the pocket anymore. If you run the circle, they're going to run out of there and you're going to get something. And that was the thing we saw from him in college. Like, no junk gets by him. Like, no junk. You are not going to get any sloppy freebies around the edge. You're not going to get any sloppy freebies in his gap. You're going to have to root his ass out of there and put him on the ground, which sometimes happens, and we've seen that happen, especially later in games. And if there's one thing, there's two parts to that. Campbell's part about more help. I think they need to continue to get more guys healthy, and we saw Julian out there more. I don't know if Aiden played quite as many snaps. I think he was still at 60, though. He was I think last week it was closer to 70. But that's still a lot. And
it's a lot.
He was so good early, and you noticed him start to taper off again. I think he said he got a cramp or Charlie horse or something, whatever.
Charlie horse, yeah.
Yeah, that he was clearly laboring through later in the game. But, like, you know, some of that is being a rookie and him having to play through that also. But, like, it's good and bad because it's like when it all comes together and he does and he can sort of figure out a way to keep the reserves where they need to be and have all that in the fourth quarter, it's going to be a completely different conversation here from a guy that we're talking about who flashes and has all these whatever to a guy who's just a problem the whole game.
Yeah.
Like a Bosa is the whole game that you have to scheme against, that you don't want to run toward. This is the impact that he's going to have, the hidden stuff that people aren't going to see. It's the pressures eventually that he creates for other people. John Kaminsky, the commish, who is a really good football player, as we're discovering, the commish is getting one-on-ones in a lot of cases because he's out there rushing next to Aiden Hutchinson. And we're gonna double him. We're not gonna double the commish. So now that's why he's out there, to take advantage of that matchup. But that speaks to the greater point of when more guys keep getting healthy, when Romeo gets back. You know, now all of a sudden, if Levi can get himself back in here again, now all of a sudden you can see what Holmes and these guys have been hoping and waiting on, especially with the front four. Like, this could be really good. And I think that Aiden is probably the number two pick and everything else that everybody looks at. But you look at the whole picture here, Colton, and there's a lot of guys up here who can play. We haven't even talked about Austin Bryant in that mix either. And he didn't play in this game. So
he was inactive, yeah.
Right. Harris got a safety. A lot of guys who can play.
It's pretty crazy that they're doing all this without Levi, without Pascal. Like, they've got some dudes that
Romeo
are coming
too,
back.
Yeah.
Romeo too, yeah. I mean, Julian got back in the mix, and I think I was watching the film back. Like, he could have had three sacks in this game.
That's classic Julian. He was in there and missed, like, seven. Yeah, right. He's disruptive.
He's leaving his feet. He's jumping in the air trying to tip the pass.
Yeah, right.
But if he just runs forward, he gets three sacks in that game, just like Aiden.
Yeah.
Or might have taken one or two away from Aiden.
Right, yeah.
But, I mean, it was good to see him back in the mix because he had a pretty good game, too. I think PFF graded him pretty high. So, they've got some dudes along this defensive line, and they're contributing, and they're swarming the ball, and they're playing with this group mentality where everybody eats. And I think that's really
perfect.
Encouraging to see.
Yeah, it's perfect. And I think they've got the right mix in there, too. Like, Charles Harris is so good at that. I think he's a leader in there. Aiden buys into that. I think both the Aquaras buy into that. It's a good group. I'm excited for them to see when, and hopefully they can all get to that point where they're healthy and everybody can get back out there. The second part of that whole equation, though, the back end of the front seven, and Malcolm Rodriguez, Colton, has probably been the most impressive rookie, I guess, on the team, considering where he was picked and everything else.
Yeah.
I am not surprised at all by any of this. I still thought this guy should have been like a second or third round pick, but whatever. He was outstanding again. Anzalone was very good as well. Lions run defense, as we thought it might be, getting better here. Starting to improve and starting to be a little sneaky good, maybe even.
Yeah, I think the Commanders only had 88 rushing yards in that game. Antonio Gibson, 14 carries, 28 yards. He had nothing in the middle.
He didn't do anything.
Malcolm was stuffing him every chance he got. Anzalone had a really good game. I think that probably goes unnoticed in this one, but even Chris said that might have
been. Chris said he thought it was the best game Anzalone's ever played in his life.
Which
is possible. That is possible. He was very good. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, Kelvin Shepherd said, look, no one's running inside of us. Like, he said that last week, and we kind of, like, paused a little bit, but they came out and they had a game like this
where they
didn't have much of anything. So there's some confidence among that linebacker room right now, especially with the way that Malcolm's playing. Anzalone feeds off of Malcolm. Like, those two have a really good connection when they're on the field together. So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I'm not ready to call it a strength yet, but
Matt
will certainly come in and improve that thing and stabilize some things for the defense. And when the defensive line is playing like that, I think it makes their jobs easier at linebacker. So I think we're seeing some of that take place.
I think that the impact that Malcolm and Hutchinson have had from an effort and energy standpoint of, like, there was a pressure that – or maybe even I don't know if it was a sack or a hit or whatever that Rodriguez had in this game.
That was the intentional grounding, I think.
Yeah, okay. Where he, like, got probably his path to the quarterback cut off, like, four different times.
Yeah.
And found a way
in there. Circles back around.
And he found a way in there. Right? I mean, he just kept going and kept rooting through there. And it was like, you're never no matter what these guys do, they're not stopping this dude. He's going to get in there and do something here. Like, that sort of, and Hutchinson does the same thing at the front. You can see it trickling down across the board. Nobody gives up on anything. You know, and not that they really did last year, but you can tell that even when guys were getting tired and wearing out, like, it really started to leak. And it leaked in this game, but it didn't leak to a point of, like, destruction. They didn't, the wheels did not fall off. We were all sitting up there waiting for that, right? We were all sitting up there waiting for, okay, the offense has hit a snag. They're not going to be perfect. This is an NFL game, for crying out loud. This is not an SEC team against a MAC team. You're going to have a couple punts in this game.
Yeah.
So the defense is going to have to make some plays. So we're just waiting. Okay, when's the front going to fall apart? When is Washington going to just start running the ball down their throat and take this game over? And they never really did. I mean, the secondary had some issues. Will Harris comes up with the big pick. But the point there is the Lions took away and were physical and did the things they needed to do from a run defense standpoint that whole game, wire to wire, to finish it off. And I thought that was so impressive, probably the most impressive thing defensively, you know, on the day. And Malcolm may be leading the charge in that. I mean, he's been their best linebacker so far, which is really not bullshit. That's real. I mean, he's been their best inside linebacker through 2 weeks, which is something.
He's PFF's highest graded run linebacker, run defense linebacker, which is crazy that he's doing that in week two.
And he got the second biggest ovation of anybody, I would say.
Yeah.
It was probably Aiden, him, and then Okuda.
Yeah, I think in that order. Yeah. And it's funny because in Hard Knocks we heard that he already had the second most requested jersey. So I think we'll see a few more 44s in Ford Field going forward. So.
Speaking of Okuda, I don't want to overlook the secondary, of course, still has a ways to go in a lot of areas. But one thing I wrote down to talk about on the show here was that this is another good day for Jeff Okuda.
Yeah.
Another good day in coverage specifically. And, you know, we know what we know about him as a run support guy and everything else. But another day where he was tested and he answered it wasn't perfect, but he had made some plays on the ball. Based on where he was 2 years ago to where he is now, it's still getting better. Or Amani doesn't play in this game. Will Harris has to step up and make plays. And, of course, that probably gets the top billing afterward. But I think it's Jeff Okuda's confidence, Colton. I mean, it's just, we can see it, right? It's going up. I mean, it just keeps raising. And that has to feel good for him, I imagine, because he's been really solid, which is exactly what he needed to be early in the season here.
He looks really good. He's stacking these good games.
Yeah.
I think that's important to see. It's not just, you know, a good series here, then you get towards the next one.
Right.
He's stacking up these solid games, these solid performances. I bet he was excited for this matchup going against his Ohio State teammate, Terry McLaurin.
Never short on those in every single game.
For real. Yeah, right. But yeah, I thought he looked solid. I think there was one play where he kind of missed a tackle and it led to, you know, a chunk play for one of those wide receivers. But other than that, I mean, I didn't really notice him. I think that's good.
Yeah.
You know, you're not seeing him get burned. You're not seeing him like, there wasn't too many like, oh, he's playing 10 yards off the ball and gives
he's
up
right
a quick
there.
Pass. Like, he's right there. So,
he came off with the cramps late that I thought, I got nervous for him because I thought there was something wrong, like even more because he, like, spiked his water bottle off the ground and went into the I call it the Stafford door, which is like that little side locker room door behind the bench where Stafford used to every time he'd come off the field, it would be like, oh God, Stafford's injured. He's going back into the Stafford door. So Okuda went in there and I was like, oh shit, he's hurt. Like, this is not good.
It's a little dramatic, yeah.
I thought it was not good. And then he came right back out and put his helmet on. You know, it was dramatic. It was him, you know, being dramatic. But then he came back in the game and he finished the game. And he played damn near 70 plays, back-to-back weeks, like you said.
Yeah.
And, like, he's dependable. That's what it's felt like through 2 weeks.
Again, I said this last week, but every time he exits the game, because like, he did that last week, too, those cramps were an issue.
Good point.
When he leaves the game, you notice that he's gone.
Happens.
Yeah. Who filled in for him? Was it Bobby?
Yeah, Price came in and something happened in this one. And I feel like Harris came in last time and the whole thing went to hell. But this time something happened. But you're right. Yes, it wasn't as bad this time.
But everyone's saying, oh, we got to get Jeff back in here. Imagine people saying that even like a month ago.
That's right.
That's a great development for this Lions team. He's not a perfect cornerback yet. But, you know, just to see him performing the way that he is so far, I think.
Yeah.
We can start to pencil him in as a player they can keep around.
Yeah, I mean, you can start to pencil him in as a solid, dependable corner, and, like, that's where it needs to start for him. And then, like, talk about everything else later, like the whether or not he lives up to the number three pick and whatever, blah blah blah. But like, it has to start somewhere, and that somewhere needs to be like he has to be a dependable player that, like you said, you know that is going to he's going to be here as you go forward, no question about it. Like that's sort of what we feel like now if we're talking about Jeff Okuda. That's where it has to begin. And it feels like for him, as still a really young player, that's where he now has a chance to maybe even get like a fresh restart going forward, including this week. One before we wrap up here, I want to talk about the test ahead at Minnesota, of course, on the road, which will be a tough atmosphere. Minnesota, with I thought looked great in week one, takes a step back and doesn't play as well against Philly as the Lions did.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, your thoughts on this one. The Lions have had their troubles with the Vikings, for sure, especially Jefferson and this offense in general, and I think everybody knows why. I mean, the run game is what it is with Cook. It's they're built to destroy a team like this, a team that if you're not stopping the run, it's going to be a long day. And, yeah, I mean, your early thoughts here on Minnesota coming in.
Oh, might get a shootout. Might be a lot of fantasy relevant players in this game.
That's a good point. Could be a fantasy watcher.
This is a big test for the secondary, right? It's like they handled the Commanders. I mean, and at least in the first half, the second half they were just throwing because they were behind, and the numbers kind of wrapped up there. But when you're going against Justin Jefferson and that dude, he's going to present a challenge for you. And Thielen can still play. And Dalvin Cook's a good back still. And again, I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I think the Lions will be able to, you know, keep it interesting. I tweeted that a couple of nights ago, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. It's going to be tough on the road. I expect the Vikings to play better at home than they did in that environment in Philly. And obviously, the Lions were at home against Philly, so
this
not
is
entirely
where,
the same situation, but a good test nonetheless.
This is where I really feel like when we talk about like Hutchinson getting help and getting, you know, not wearing out. This is where you're on the road. You're playing against a team who's going to try to run the ball right at you. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Jefferson doesn't need any help, but that's how they get him, you know, to the video game gaudy numbers where it's like, you have to make decisions with your coverage based on, you know, where am I putting my numbers? Am I giving extra help, you know, over the top on him, or are we going to let Dalvin Cook just eat our lunch? And so there's always a decision that you sort of have to make when you play the Vikings, and a lot of that gets made easier if your front can hang in there and do what it's supposed to do for the full. This will be a bigger test than what they saw against the Eagles, against the run, for sure, in my opinion, because and then from a downhill in the box, and that includes Malcolm, that includes Anzalone, Minnesota's offensive line is good enough to do it, and Cook is a beast, as we know. I mean, you know, we saw what we saw in week one when they weren't able to finish plays in the hole. This could get a lot worse than that, and plus they've got guys over the top. So this is a big, big challenge, Colton, like you said, and like for a lot of guys to maybe show, especially on defense, like we've seen flashes. Maybe we need to see – are you going to show us more? Like, you know, we were guys on the other side of the ball last year that were at that spot. Like, St. Brown and Sewell for the first few weeks showed us flashes, and then they showed us more. And it was like, okay, now we're talking. Gotta I think that's the next step for a lot of these guys on defense, I would say.
I think you're right. Yeah, big game for Malcolm. If he's just doing what he's been doing, that already is, you know, going to help this team. You know, Anzalone's got to keep doing what he – like, he had a great game, I thought, on Sunday. If he can do that again, I think that makes your run game a little bit stiffer. Because I don't know. It's an interesting game because that's every team in this division is 1-1 right now.
That's the difference now. Is like, as opposed to last year, now we're talking about a game that matters a little bit more. We're talking about a game now that against two teams in the division that are 1-1, you're on the road. It's going to be rocking and rolling in there, as it always is, and like that's going to be the big test for a lot of these younger guys on both sides of the ball, and for Jared Goff, and for the whole team of like, you're going to get like, this is the first two games were at home. The first game did not go the way you wanted it to. The second game kind of did. It's probably not going to go as easy as you want it to go here on the road. You're going to have to make some things go your way. You're going to have to fight back. You're going to have to get through the adversity just to be able to get into the old deep water that they'd like to talk about. And like, that's where the Lions have their best chance, is when they're in that strangle you out to the end of the rope and let's see if we can hang it. Like, that's when they had their chance. But in a game like this, they're going to have to sustain those blows early and find a way to hang in there. And that's what, you know, good teams do. So this is another huge test for them. And I think also another opportunity to say, like, yeah, like the not quitting, the being competitive, they could be down early in this game. Like, I could definitely 14-0. I could see something like that happening. And like,
yep.
Are you going to let the wheels fall off? Or are you going to come back and make this a game like every other NFL team does?
Yeah,
that's the next challenge I think that we're looking at from them. And I think this is a great opportunity coming in. Like you said too, Colton, you know, a Seattle team on the other side of that coming in that you, again, you could beat.
If they can pull this one off and right. Start off 2-1.
You got so Seattle. Now you're looking at a situation suddenly here where you don't want to get ahead of yourself. But look, I don't hate if they wanted to get ahead of themselves. If I were them, I'd be like, shit, look at this, guys. Here's the deal.
Yeah.
Go out there.
New England after that. Yeah.
And go then out there on Sunday against a playoff team, which I think Minnesota's got what it takes.
Yeah. To play,
you know.
I think so.
Give it, you know, empty the tank, and we've got two games that against teams that we know we can beat if we play our ball, you know, the way we need to.
Then a bye, and then a Cowboys team that might still be without Dak at that point, October 23rd.
Yeah.
So.
Dare to dream, I would
dare
say.
Dare to dream.
Doesn't hurt, I would say. Because
we're definitely getting ahead of ourselves. But
it's more of a manageable situation, though, than it's been in the past, yes. And I think that that's fine. But it could all go away in a blink, as we know, on Sunday. It has before in Minneapolis. But Colton will be there, of course, to check it out from beautiful, whatever the hell that stadium is called these days. I don't even know. It's not the Metrodome anymore or whatever else. It's some sort of bank.
U.S. Bank.
Yeah,
U.S. Bank Stadium.
One of the nicest, maybe the nicest stadium in the NFL.
Everyone says it's the best, so I'm excited
for that. It's a really, really cool place, and Minneapolis is awesome, too. So excited for you to see that and everything else. But Colton will be there, and then we'll, of course, be back next week to break it all down. Colton, you good? You got anything else to hit on this week here?
Nah, keep enjoying your victory week.
Victory week.
We stretch this out to victory week now.
A couple more days before it wears off. We'll see if they can do it again. But in any event, we'll talk about it next week. For Colton, I'm Nick. Take care of each other, and we'll talk to you soon.